Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 1, Chapter 8, prayers by Queen Kunti, Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 8. This is a wonderful picture of Prabhupada. That's in South India, on the silver asya.
Where is it?
That's
in South India.
Vrindavan, isn't it? I think it's South India. They gave him a special Vyasa. It's all silver.
I have that picture.
Prabhupada looks so regal.
I never knew where that was. You sure it's South India?
I think so. They gave it. It was like a special thing. They only bring it out for the...
I see. Oh, by the way, it's just not a temple. No, not one of our temples.
No.
Because I have that picture, and different people ask me sometimes where it is.
I read it somewhere in Harisar's diary or somebody. Yeah, something like that. I forget the details.
There we go. There's a mistake. We don't have a silver vessel.
Oh, it looks so wonderful. He's just sitting there like a little boy. When I gave massage to sometimes, Prabhupada was just like a good boy. He'd just be sitting, just a simple boy. He looked like, what he looks like here. But we had a question about this chronologically. We just finished the last chapter, and that was, Aswatthama was brought into the camp by after he tried to release the Brahmastra, and then it was checked by Arjuna. Then he was captured, brought into the camp, humiliated, cut the sika, driven out of camp. Then they go, they lead all the people, the women lead, they go to the Ganga for the final, the five children were killed and so on. Mm-hmm. And then it starts here, that Krishna is ready to leave, and then again Aswatthama, the Brahmastra is coming. So my question is,
This is the Shanta prayer, Pahi Pahi Maha Yogi Deva Deva Vigapati.
No, but the question coming now is, how has this weapon from Aswatthama come? He was already arrested and driven out of the camp. You mean he still had power to throw it up? Or this weapon was already in
the
ether?
I guess the arrow was gone.
I think that's it, yeah.
After the arrow has been released,
I think that must be it.
The arrow has been released.
Because it's been a while.
Yeah, I guess so.
They went to the Ganga and they... Anyway, purport. All the members of the family of the Pandavas were completely dependent on the protection of the Lord, and therefore the Lord protected all of them in all circumstances. The Lord protects everyone, but one who depends completely upon Him is especially looked after by the Lord. The father is more attentive to the little son who is exclusively dependent on the father. Maybe I'll just do one more verse.
You didn't read translation, just quickly.
Oh. Excuse me. I read it.
As soon as he seated himself
on the chariot to start for Dwarka, he saw Uttara hurriedly towards him in fear. Maybe I didn't, huh? It was a word by word. It was pretty clear in the word by word. That's right. Okay, so Krishna's going to Dwarka. He's sitting on the chariot, and then here comes Uttara. Uttara Uvacha, universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. Istam shapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa karma hridati sa pradantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we're reading here how Prabhupada is saying in the Purport, Krishna, the Lord protects everyone, but one who depends completely upon Him is especially looked after by the Lord. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Samaham sarvabhutesu name dveso stinapriyaha yeva janti tuman bhaktiya maiteshu te chapiyaham. Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So this is natural, Prabhupada mentions in the purport here. It's natural that Krishna is equal to everyone, just like the sun is giving its rays 360 degrees. But somebody who takes advantage of it, then he'll get the full benefit. Whereas somebody else, if they keep themselves in the closet, they won't get the benefit. So in the spiritual world, there's oneness because everyone is in the presence of the Lord. Everyone is, receiving that mercy fully. So there's no envy. We're not envious of somebody else who's more advanced because everyone gets what they want there in the spiritual world. So there's no envy at all. But here in the material world, because we are keeping ourselves separate from the Lord, we don't allow the Lord to to see us, just like the gopis when they came to Krishna for the bathing ghat, when Krishna took their clothes, then Krishna obliged them to reveal themselves fully. They became fully naked for his pleasure. So this is the business of the soul. The soul should be completely open, revealed for the pleasure of the Lord. But we keep ourselves hidden. We don't allow the Lord to enjoy us. This is really his position. He's the Purusha. We're all Prakriti. We're meant to be enjoyed by the Lord. But instead of opening ourselves up for his perusal, for his enjoyment, for his inspection, we keep some corner, some part. This is mine. We were reading Thomas Merton, said some nice thing about that. We can, the demoniac mentality is that we keep a part of our, in our mind, that we'll never surrender. There we're absolute. Therefore it said, Satan says, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. So we have, each one of us have a little, own little patch of hell called our mind. And there, we can be all in all. We can be absolute. No, nobody's going to make me change my mind. I made up my mind. So there we feel we have sovereignty. We are the lords. We're the lords, we think. But of course, that's also an illusion. Because the mind also is... Yeah, there's a cold spell. I just looked beyond the thing. The weather is just complete change. It's snowing where you live right now.
Snowing?
Yeah.
Snowing in the mountain.
Yeah. So anyway, this is the material world. There's always duality, heat and cold. So get back to the spiritual subject. So we want to... you can say... Enter into that spiritual realm, then this is the qualification. We have to be non-envious. So that envy begins with Krishna. We're envious of each other because we see, oh, he has an advantage, he has a quality, he has something that I don't have. But really it starts with Krishna because Krishna is the one who has everything. He has the most opulence, the most beauty, the most knowledge, the most strength, the most renunciation. Everything he has in full, and we're envious of that. So Isha Vesha Samudpena. This is why we come to the material world, because we have this desire to enjoy, and we're envious of the one who is really the enjoyer. Krishna is the Purusha. He's the enjoyer. So we have to change our consciousness. This is the whole purpose of our society, International Society of Krishna Consciousness. We have to uproot this envious mentality, uproot this this false idea that I'm the enjoyer, I'm the proprietor, I'm the controller. And we have to agree, yes, Krishna is. And let him use me as he sees fit. It's like the gopis. Why the gopis are exalted by Uddhava and everyone, Lord Chaitanya? Because of this mentality. They're completely available for Krishna's use. Just like a stick in the hand, it has no. At the same time, not like the Mayavadis, that we lose our independence, but by voluntarily agreeing to become the sold-out slave of Krishna, then we become the most exalted. The gopis are the most exalted because of that mentality. So Lord Chaitanya has instructed us, we should follow in the footsteps of the gopis, and not, try to, in other words, keep ourselves open for the revelation or inspiration or coming from the Lord, so that we can, you can say, reestablish in our natural position. This is our natural position, just like the hand is naturally serving the body. So our natural constitutional position is to be available for Krishna's pleasure. So that's what's required. Instead of competing with the Lord and thinking, I'm going to be the enjoyer, I'm going to enjoy, especially sex life is very prominent in the material world, which is the, you know, the emblem of duality, because the male is thinking, I can enjoy, and the female is also thinking, I can enjoy. And therefore, there's always this, you can say, war of the sexes that's going on. And the Veda culture is so nice that they've solved this war to some degree, at least. The battle of the sexes, which is so prominent here in the West, has been minimized in the Veda culture because everyone understands that actually Krishna is the enjoyer. And according to their nature, they're all acting for Krishna's pleasure. The man is acting for Krishna's pleasure. He's following the Acharya. And the woman's acting also according to her nature, which is to serve her husband. This is the first business of the wife or the woman, to serve her family member, her father, her husband, whoever, her grown-up son. but unfortunately in the West, this is not, this idea is not very much appreciated, and everyone wants to be equal, this demon-crazy democracy. It simply creates chaos because democracy means everyone has an equal vote. So the majority of people are always a sudra. In any society, majority is always a sudra. So the sudras say, yeah, we want abortion on demand. We want no-fault divorce. We want so many things. And therefore, gradually, the result of democracy is gradually it goes lower and lower and lower. Because the base is always broad, very big, like a pyramid. The Brahmins at the top. So the sutras are always in the majority. So you give them the direction how to go forward, and then you're going to be degraded more and more. And even in this country, in the beginning, the only people who had to vote were the landed aristocracy, practically. There was no vote even to the ordinary man. He didn't have a vote unless he could show that he owned property. And of course, women had no vote. But gradually, by the influence of because it started with monarchy. You see, they were rebelling against the king because the king was not good. And so it gradually comes down from the Brahminical culture, the Kshatriya culture, and then it becomes the Sudra culture. Communism is the emblem of that Sudra culture. And here is still some remnants of Vaishya culture, but practically the future is not very bright. We see that. Therefore, we have to bring about a revolution somehow to introduce this Krishna consciousness movement, this Vedic culture. Both things should go hand in hand. We were just reading yesterday. Can I put it here? That how Prabhupada is explaining. Oh, it's in the previous book. Yeah. In the end of the chapter, when he's it'll be seven, huh? Yeah. How. The Vedic culture is so nice that every, I don't know if I can find it now. He was describing, remember Krishna, about the different,
I think that this was in the eighth chapter.
Or maybe it was the beginning of eighth, huh? We just read a couple of days ago.
Prabhupada made like 5 points.
Oh, here it is, yeah. Good point. It's text 5, and the purport, Prabhupada is giving, in the glorious days before the advent of the Kali Yuga, the Brahmins, the cows, the women, the children, the old men were properly given protection. First, the protection of the Brahmins maintains the institution of Varna and Ashram, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. Two, protection of cows maintains the most miraculous form of food, milk, for maintenance of finer tissue of the brain, for understanding higher aim of life. Three, protection of women maintains the chastity of society by which we get a good generation for peace, tranquility, progress of life. Four, the protection of children gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of begetting a child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhan Samskara, the beginning of pure life. And five, the protection of all men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for better life after death. You want to see. So, the point is that in order to be protected, they have to agree to be protected. That's the first principle. The children have to agree that, okay, I'm not independent. Yeah, I'm living in your house just like now. Who was telling the story on the GHQ how when a Bhagavat's child came, it was Amiyatma came. Amiyatma came to Bhagavat's house and his kids started kicking him. Kicking him. Oh, and the mother was saying, no, no, he has to be allowed to get out his frustration. This is the modern day. You know, the children aren't disciplined, aren't properly trained up to be obedient. And this is not, you know, your child. This is the parents' house. You have to do what you're told. You can't stay out until 11 o'clock at night when you're a 12-year-old girl. There are certain rules. And so the child, you want to protect them. They have to come under your protection. They have to be, okay, yes, daddy, you're in charge here. I'll do what you say. The same with everybody. In order to protect them properly, they have to agree to be protected. Even the Brahmins, they're also, they're more independent, but still, if they want to be protected, then they have to cooperate with the Kshatriyas. Because motive goodness alone, it can be, you can say, disturbed by the demoniac passion. So therefore, motive goodness has to be some tinge of passion there in order to protect it. So the Kshatriya is required. This is the auspicious combination, Brahmin Kshatriya. The Brahmin protects the Kshatriya protects the Brahmin. And it goes on nicely. But unfortunately, we have no such Vedic culture nowadays. So we have to bring it about. I'm convinced of that. Why is Prabhupada putting it in the purport like this? This is his law book for the next 10,000 years. He's not just saying these things. This is like Shastra. When he'll say, all we have to do is chant Hare Krishna, we don't have to worry about these things. No, this is our instruction, how to give protection. Means that women have to agree, yes, please protect me. If they don't have that mood, then what can a husband or father do? And this is why the girl should be married at a young age, because once they reach 20, 21, 22, naturally, everybody else, all the other women are independent, they're going to want to be independent of the father. Therefore, it's advised that we should get our daughters married. Was it 3 years after their first men's?
A man is sensitive, how can you be
married? Okay, so I'll stop here. Some comments?
Yeah, a couple of comments. You mentioned about democracy, about how in the old days, even the older days, because you think of democracy in Athens.
Yeah.
So who could vote? Not if you were a landowner. The only people who could vote were those who could afford to buy armor and were willing to put the armor on when the Spartans came to the door.
This is in Athens.
That was in Athens. Only those who were willing, because like even like
Socrates, those are the real citizens.
Socrates was heavy infantry. He was a hoplite. Because he couldn't afford a horse, so he had to be infantry. Only those who were willing to make the other guy die. That's a good vote. Not even if you were land. If you got all the land in the world, but if you didn't buy armor and put it on,
I see.
Then you couldn't vote.
Democracy is definitely leading us to lower and lower. You can see that. I mean, I've seen it in my own experience in the 50 years that I've been conscious, let's say, in America. I'm 62, and so say from the time I was 10 or 12 years old, this country has gone down. I mean, there was no abortion. I remember seeing on television, they would lock up the doctors, bringing him in, this person was performing abortion, and they were bringing the police were putting him in jail. There was no drugs. I mean, there was no, like now you see this liquor barn, it's just stores of size. There was drinking. I can't say there was no drinking, but it wasn't something so. And gambling, now the government is encouraging you, come and take the lotto, become rich.
Horrible.
Yeah. So it's definitely degraded. The result is so much divorce. This is the first point. And when there's so much divorce, then the children get screwed up. That's a fact. Even the commies know that.
Before divorce, there's unwanted children.
Yeah. That's the other part. So much unwanted.
I saw an interesting when I was just first got on the internet, and I went to the something which shows a barometer of what America's like. I went to the U.S. Postal Service website, and they had an interesting series of letters called Letters from the Front. On the front line. So the first one actually was from the Civil War, before Darwinism came to the country. And that letter practically was like out of the nectar of devotion. The quality of, because it was about a Union soldier sending a letter to a Confederate father a year after the war was over because the Postal Service hadn't been re-established. And he was describing how at the Battle of Gettysburg, which had been like 3 years before that, he saw a Confederate soldier, and when he was charging, he saw a Confederate soldier, and he was just like, he was like impelled to stop because of the demeanor of the soldier, lying there dying, but his face was effulgent. And so he stopped, and he gave him water, and the soldier had no, this is the way he's the writing is like, this is like, guys, like, you think he's a genius, but he's like a sergeant. And this is how the soldier said, I have no ill feelings to anybody, and I just, he's just very calm, and just, I point out, there's my dying brothers over there dying. Please, just write to my father after this, like this. And so, in the end, and he signs out, your servant. And it was just such a godly letter. And the next one is like from the First World War. You can see things have definitely degraded. Mm-hmm. And the Second World War, the consciousness degraded. And the Vietnam War was like was the pits. But that was not as bad as the Desert Storm War. And it was like complete, like a downhill, like that.
Yeah. I'll just figure this one.
Yeah.
But I guess
what was an interesting thing is that a few years ago, and I was in Sam's Club, and there was a book, they were showing a book, it was called The Angels of Death. The name of the book was The Angels of Death, but it was about the Battle of Gettysburg. And the book was written by a professor from the University of Florida. And he said in the introduction that he had to translate, although this book is based upon their letters and memoirs of actual participants, but I had to translate it because the English was so theological. The language and the letters, this is the common people's writing, was so theological, I have to translate it into modern English.
Yeah, even in the Middle Ages in Europe.
This is in the 1860s, though.
Yeah.
The language is so theological, they were so God-conscious that I have to translate it into modern English.
Yeah.
This is the effect of Charles Darwin.
Only one thing that has improved. The holy name of the Lord is being chanted by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada in so many places.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going on before, right? Not in the same organized way, at least.
But the deterioration.
No, but that's why, I mean, we have to be convinced that Prabhupada is the only hope in Prabhupada.
Can you imagine? You think so much going on, and we're only 5,000 years. What are you going to look like in another 400 so many years?
Yeah.
No, I just heard Prabhupada say in a tape yesterday that he mentioned it. I think he's talking about Toynbee. Toynbee says that 10,000, because Toynbee is a very famous
historian.
What about the future history? They start talking about future history. The next 10,000 years. You're into 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga now. The next 10,000 years is going to be progressively better. Then after that, it's finished.
Yeah, can you imagine? So 10,000 compared to 400 is nothing. So, you know, what about that 390, whatever, 300, 400?
Yeah, there's some description, right? They'll be eating their own children.
Yes.
And,
can you imagine?
Murdering. I happen to look up.
The bodies will be hunted by the sport.
All different Puranas. Huh? I dug up what it said about the different yugas. And it's not,
it says the bodies will be hunted like a sport.
Oh, really?
Like a sport.
In other words, like you go hunting rabbits or something?
Yeah.
Let's go hunting some devotees today.
I guess as a devotee, you'll definitely have guns.
There probably won't be many devotees, though.
Yeah. And another point was that I had one client from Australia. She was from Jamaica, and she went to Australia to be a nanny.
Black body.
To also be a nanny. And what happened was that, just commenting about how you say how about that, the little kids. The mother was like a lawyer, but the kids were so nasty. But they can't do anything. They're threatening the children. These are small children. And they're threatening that they'll call the police on the parents. If the nanny tries to do anything, or the mother, then they'll call the police.
And the father in the house?
The father. The parents can't do anything.
With the fear of God in them?
No, because they'll call the police for child abuse.
Yeah. This is Kali Yuga. Advancing.
In fact, when I was in Alachua, you know, that the Alachua village, so there's some black kids there, and they were in. They were locals. And they were just talking, and one of the kids, under 10 years old, asking if I was a vegetarian. Said, yeah. I said, well, what if one of the kids became non-vegetarian? Put the fear of God in them. Immediately the kid said, that's child abuse. Jack called the police. Immediately the kid.
They know their rights.
They didn't know their rights.
But in a lot of places, the cops, you know, don't do anything. You can still. Did Srila Prabhupada say anything about Kalki in this?
Yeah, in the 12th canto. Well, that's not Prabhupada.
It doesn't come for another 427,000 years.
But I'm asking, does it come? Will it come?
Not for another 427,000
years? Will it come then?
Yes. He said, but my disciples won't be there.
Okay, thank you. What's the name? Narayan said Kalki doesn't come.
Narayan Maharaj says, I've heard him personally say it, I was completely by surprise. So when I went once or twice, I thought he'd be Kirtan or whatever. Anyways, he said, when Lord Chaitanya comes, in the Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya comes, there's no copy.
He's
quoting Shastra. Hey, come on.
How does it come next to the Satya Yuga? Because that's what he...
Listen, right there, and then I just... And he's quoting, he was backing it up with all kinds of quotes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was the only one...
He's a disciple of Prabhupada, right?
Prabhupada definitely said
he calls himself a Shiksha disciple of Prabhupada.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying is I said, I wasn't going to quote Shastra because I said I don't know to quote any, and I'm just thinking around this, and I'm the only one who's hearing this, you know.
Yeah.
It is a little different than what I heard before, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I was just checking if there was anything.
Well, we could double check, but
Folio?
Yeah, Folio, right? Prabhupada did. I remember him saying, this is what I remember, that Kaki will come, 420, then there will be no more preaching, only killing, and then something, but then he said, but my disciples won't be there because they'll all be going back to Godhead. Something like that. I remember him saying like that. But I definitely never heard him say, Kaki's not coming this Kali Yuga. God, I've never heard. We could check it. I have Folio upstairs.
And the other question I had is, the only thing I don't understand what makes a soul, become envious of Krishna when you're in the spiritual world.
Well,
there must be so many, because supposedly that the material world is one quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're constitutionally, if you're eternal.
No, but it's like Bhaktivinoda says, there's nothing easier for the small to think he's become great. It's like everybody.
That's the reason you see some devotee who's doing nice, and all of a sudden you see him next time they made a choice.
Yeah, but
you can just see it happen here.
Yes, but the difference is, in the material world, there's always.
No, this kind of not material world.
Okay, but in the material world out there, when you go out there, there's always the Maya is always there, but there is no Maya in the spiritual world.
But in one sense, you know how this is adjusted? Actually, you don't fall down. Nobody falls down. It's like in a dream. Because the soul is always spiritual. It doesn't mix with matter. It's like oil and water. But you take the dream as the reality. And so it looks like you fall down, but really, it's just like you have to wake up out of this dream. Jeev Jaga, wake up.
Yeah, but you seem to be in a friggin' long time in this dream.
Well, that's called time distortion.
Time what?
Time distortion. Appears,
yeah, but when you wake up, you think, "Oh, what was that? What was that?"
Yeah, you can take a short little one minute nap, and empires are created and like that,
Yes.
Sometimes you have it seems like a short nap, and
it's more than that, because otherwise there wouldn't be the whole material world and all this thing going on.
No, look, Krishna explains in the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava why he creates dreams. Krishna explains dreams are created. So that a thoughtful man will think, "Wow, that seems so real." It was just a dream.
He probably used to say night dream and daydream. So this is a daydream now we have.
So
I'm dreaming that Kapila is sitting here.
Because dreams are real.
Prabhupada says they're real. Sometimes you pass semen in a dream.
No,
your heart beats faster, your eyes move.
They're real because. Yajnavalkya explains to Janaka Maharaj that in the Brihat Aranyakopanishad, they're real because they're created by God. The difference is that in a dream, it's not a shared reality.
Hmm.
It's only the person's experience.
Subjective.
It's not a shared reality. I don't share your dream. But in this, we're sharing this dream. It's a shared reality.
Uh-huh.
It's not a shared reality. But it's created, it's real because it's created by Krishna.
So let's say you get a vision or something, but a subjective thing that happens to you. But how can you share it with somebody? I mean, if it's not shared, then it's a dream. I mean, suppose
all he's just saying is what he said in the dream about dreams.
Okay, but we also say there's four different levels of consciousness. There's deep sleep, there's dreaming, there's wakefulness, and then there's
Turiya.
Turiya, the fourth state of samadhi.
Right.
So that Turiya stage is not a dream.
The Brihat Aranyakopanishad gives a lot of explanation about sleep, about dreaming. Specifically, talks about deep sleep, what happens in deep sleep, and how the consciousness of the consciousness, which is in blood, retracts, and then the jiva enters into the Susumna Nadi in the heart, and then it enters into Brahman. And then all memory is wiped out because you don't become aware of the external world anymore because you're just like a lover in the embrace of the loved one doesn't notice anything else anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like a song, I only have eyes for you, type of thing. You don't notice anything else because you're in the embrace of God now. So you don't remember any more. Time has passed.
You're talking about deep sleep.
It's called susupti. Susupti. But we have to sleep because the living entity is alive, but we're in the world of death. And that's why we get tired. Because it's like a battery reaches out. So if we charge the battery, we have to enter back into life, into God, literally.
And what is that Turiya?
Turiya is when you're no longer in the material consciousness.
Samadhi.
Samadhi.
means out of the material consciousness.
Spiritual Prabhupada was in his last day.
All the time, you can say.
But
he was,
means Krishna consciousness.
That day was so special. He would not respond to calling, he would not respond to anything.
Yeah. Trance or some kind.
But the thing is that in the spiritual world, how do you advance in the spiritual world?
Because your love increases, and Krishna reciprocates with you more. His love increases, and your love increases, and so it's dynamic.
One of the definitions of the word Brahma is ever increasing.
Okay, but how do you advance?
Brahma Bhuta.
How can you let's say that some people don't want to be in Vaikuntha anymore, they want to go to Goloka Vrindavan.
Generally not, right? When Gopa Kumar, okay, he was there and he was exhibiting, you know, the symptoms of the, but they weren't into it. His associates at that level, they couldn't relate to his calling out, hey, Govinda. So he called out to Narayan. What are you doing? You know, this is Narayan, you can't. So that, you know, their rasa was different, so they didn't feel that. Generally, you don't change your rasa. You have, you know, your, we say your rasa is eternal. But it's hard. I mean, it's hard. Bhaktivinoda talks about this whole question of falling down. And also in the Bhakti Loka. We have it there? Is that right there? The green book?
He says that
it's inconceivable, really. There's some aspect of it that you can't understand because our mind is set up to think of past, present, and future. But in the spiritual world, there is no past, present, and future somehow. At the same time, things have a sequence. Just like we say here, Prabhupada just said in this purport, in the spiritual world, there's oneness. There's no duality. It's a non-dual state. But how can we understand that? A non-dual state where there's different living entities and having exchange, and that we can't really grasp that concept.
We are in a dream, we are not really, woken up properly.
Yeah, yeah. So therefore for us, the non-dual state where there's variety, it seems like a contradiction.
It's a time factor. Maitreya explains to Vidura, it is the time factor itself which separates the material world out of the spiritual world. It is the time factor which stirs up the triguna, and creates it. The Prabhupada explains it's like creates a separated energy, like my voice on a tape recorder. It's the time factor which says that.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm asking this is when you read in the Nityananda Charitamrita and in other ones, there is written that Advaita Acharya is somewhere. He is Sada Shiva. He is different living entities combined in one.
Speaking of that, the Roy is Arjuna and somebody else combined, isn't it? Roy is two personalities.
Okay, there is some of them where there's one personality, two personalities, three personalities, and that's where I am. That lost me.
Yeah, I'm lost on that too. I don't understand.
I just read 2 days ago about Lord Advaita Acharya.
Yes.
Lord Shiva, Sada Shiva, he went to ocean, this new ocean, and he started meditation for Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu appeared, and he said, actually, there's no difference between us. We have only different bodies. And he embraced Lord Shiva, and this was like these two bodies combined in one body.
Yes.
And appeared like.
Yes, but you see, for Vishnu Tattva, it's easy to understand. I mean, some are, because, that's. But for Jiva Tattva, I find more difficult to understand because I am independent. I mean.
An individual, also. Individual.
Individual is the word, okay? Yeah. I'm an individual.
Means you now, can't be divided.
Yes, can't be divided. And if two individuals come in one body, then we'd have two souls.
Schizophrenic.
Well, obviously not, because they're pure devotees.
So maybe you have one person in your cup.
Yeah. You're right, but it's a little, you know, I'm just...
Yeah, it's hard.
We're not used to it.
We're not used to
it. Some mystery is there.
And then the other thing is this, which I find a little bit, you know, in Dwarka.
But before you, I mean, when I first proposed the whole concept of reincarnation, right?
Okay. Well, I never had trouble with that.
I never had trouble with that.
Me
either.
Neither.
Well, I'm not saying
I had trouble with this too.
Child.
I'm not saying I have no trouble with it. In the sense that I'm doubting it. I have no trouble. I'm just trying to understand it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm. You understand? It's not like I have trouble. How can it be possible? It's not like that.
Yeah.
I'm simply trying to say it. The only other thing. The next thing is this is something when you read the Priya Bhagavatamrita, the first part, which available to me. And there, it explains, you know, the goal of the devotees go higher and higher and higher. We are Dwarka. These are big-time devotees. You know what I mean?
The Yadus.
But, at the same time, a lot of those Yadus are demigods. Right there, it's like, the demigods supposedly are not on that level, but these, how is it possible for a person to incarnate into the Yadus and be such a big time devotee? You know what I mean? So I'm just saying
but
that.
Pradyumna is a demigod. He's Kama, Kamadev.
Well, others too.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not dead finished and they don't go back to being demigods.
They made some serious advancement.
Only then, why would they want to take birth as humans? That they can. Because generally, demigods
to be with Krishna.
Yes, because that's why that's why I was asking this. It seems like it that to make advancement, I'm only saying that's what I read. I was trying to understand this. It seems like to make advancement in the spiritual world, sometimes is you have to come down here and perform some, do some, you know, special yajna on behalf of Krishna to the conditioned living entities, and then some other you make. It's a big sacrifice to do that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the spiritual world, it doesn't seem to be, it's not a big sacrifice. You know what I mean?
They say that, I can't remember a very long time ago, that the Pandavas were all each of them Indras before.
I got to do my puja. Because I think he's going to make breakfast, I'm going to make an offering.
Okay.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.